Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. Silence your cell phones, for you are now listening to Much Ado About Wrestling!
Welcome, fair listeners, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the intercontinental heavyweight podcast of the world. And Tito Santana can't accept the fact that Much Ado About Wrestling is up there knocking on heaven's door, high altitude, about to come down on the danger zone. Whoa, freak out! I only did a little bit of Savage at the end of that. I'm one half of your scholarly presenters, Andrew Terrence Caroline, and with me, as always, is the secondary host, Tyler Ward. Tyler, how are you doing beyond the fact that you're currently eating a salad?
Wonderful. I'm doing great. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Much Ado About Wrestling. I am eating healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear me chomping my salad.
I assure you that I will not be eating healthy. I eat a lot of dessert. So
hey man, it's been a rough year. You treat yourself, buddy.
Yeah, I will. This is a question I'm going to give you that maybe should have waited to the kayfabe machine. But with the news of like a seemingly live action Spider-Verse movie where they're bringing back all the people from all the Spider-Man movies,
yes.
How sad are you that Bonesaw isn't going to be able to be in it?
It's unfortunate because I would love there is potential for Bonesaw, but in the like Disney Star Wars things of like digitally in Macho Man Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
I don't know if I would love that or hate that. But I'm super excited for a potential grizzled old Tobey Maguire.
Yeah, me too.
That sounds awesome.
I'm very excited for that, but that's not what this podcast is about today. We touched on the passing of Pat Patterson, the original Intercontinental Champion, in our last episode. So we thought that while the iron was still hot, we're going to dedicate this episode to the title that he created and popularized. Probably the most recognizable secondary title in all of pro wrestling, and that is the WWE Intercontinental Championship. But before we get into that, no, Tommaso Ciampa or Taz are not entering behind me. That's just actual emergency sirens. Apologies. But we have a few news items we want to go through before we get to the Intercontinental Championship. Which one do you want to lead off with, Tyler?
Let's see. So we'll start with some good news. We'll start with some good news right now. Recently, about a little over a week ago, the man, Becky Lynch, and Seth Rollins welcomed their first child into the world.
Yeah, congratulations.
Congratulations.
They can't hear me saying
parents.
That, but
So they welcomed their first child. Congrats to the new parents. That kid is going to be like the next Shawn Michaels, probably, honestly.
What was the name of their child again? They said it was something really interesting.
It's
Rue. R-O-U-X, something like that?
Yeah, because when I saw it, I told Sarah about it. I was like, oh, they named their kid Rue. That's a really cute name. And Sarah was like, oh. And then I told her how it was spelled, and she was like, I don't like that.
it's like a WCW wrestler / cartoonist Lash LaRue,
yes.
I think. Yeah, if you remember him.
It's a very cute name. But yes, so my point of bringing this up is, of course, congratulations, but also, do we think this is enough time that we could see Becky back for the Rumble?
No. 0% on my...
I don't know. Rumble's at the end of January. That's...
Yeah. I will say no for the same reason that in other like tertiary wrestling recent news that The Rock shot down any idea of having a match against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania this year. That like if you're not going to be able to do it in front of fans, it's a wasted opportunity.
We can't have fans back for the Rumble, then
yeah, that would be my justification. And it's like, I think maybe Seth will be back, but I hope that Becky gets to spend some time with her child as a new mother. And like the women's division in WWE in the past 4 to 5 months has been the one part of the show that has not been floundering, so I feel like they don't need her to rush back. in a way that maybe having Seth back quicker would be more valuable.
And it's, and honestly, I just want to say it's amazing that WWE's women's division has been doing so well without Becky or Charlotte there.
Well, really, really, Bayley and Sasha Banks have been outstanding, and Asuka had a really hot run earlier.
NXT women are just
they've been great too. Yeah, so they've been holding it down. It's funny that even like late breaking news that there's a second wrestling baby as of last night.
Yes.
With the news that Cody and Brandi Rhodes are going to be expecting a child as well.
Yes.
And I guess I totally forgot about Renee Young and Dean Ambrose. I call them both by their old names. that Renee and John Moxley have. Mm-hmm. So yeah, lots of babies that we'll maybe talk about them in the kayfabe machine a little bit later. We also got some news as we have new life in the wrestling world. We have the cycle of life as The Undertaker retired and is moving to NXT potentially as a trainer. Mm-hmm. What do you think the likelihood is of him continuing as a character on TV? NXT TV.
Yeah, that's the tough one because, again, with a character like The Undertaker, it's kind of all or nothing. Like, you can't have The Undertaker just show up in a backstage segment to, like, you know, talk up someone. So, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, I don't want to see Mark Calloway, the trainer, showing up on NXT TV only to eventually see The Undertaker show up, like, on a pay-per-view when it's needed.
Yeah,
I just think it'd be too weird, but I am not putting it past Vince McMahon and the WWE to call The Undertaker when they need to, compete with AEW or something.
Yeah, I do think I'm excited for the idea of him as a trainer, especially with the influx of, of big guys that they've gotten in recently. Mm-hmm. That I think I imagine he will be the big guy coach, basically. And I think that he will have a lot to bring.
They found a bigger guy than Matt Bloom.
Yeah. Bigger guy than A-Train. So this is a news story that we're going to argue about whether or not it actually is a news story. AEW beat Raw in the television ratings for all 3 hours in the 18 to 49 demographic this week. There's a lot of qualifiers on that.
You have to say in the demographic.
In the demographic. But is this a big deal or is this a non-story?
I think it's both because, you have to clarify it of being like within the most important demographic of 18 to 49, AEW did beat Raw. And sure, that's a big thing. But when describe it to the non-fan, describe it to me like I'm five, Raw still had more viewers, total, which maybe that's what matters. I don't know. It depends on who you're talking to about that. I think it's important. Like, I don't know. What do you feel about it?
I think it is indicative of the damage that AEW has been able to do in a year's time, and that they are not taking big chunks away from WWE as a whole, that they're focusing their attack on one area, right? They're saying the 18 to 49 mostly male demographic, the diehard fans, like, this is who we're going to go after. And that certainly would be enough to sustain AEW as like a growing and big company. But I think the one thing that no one's going to be able to take away from WWE now, unless they make a company that specifically is just going for this target, is that WWE is going to have older dads and moms watching with their younger kids. And that is just like, they are like Disney in that sense. And I know that that is what the WWE network and their programming is made to be like now, right? It's made to be like the Disney vault. So, so like, that would be the bigger story if they lost with, you know, I actually don't know what the lumping together is. Is it like 8 to 14 or something? I don't know what it is for kids, but
no
like
idea.
Like if they lost in that demo,
8 to 14 sounds good.
Yeah, I think it's also like I've seen, marks fighting online about this a lot. Sure. And I've seen WWE apologists be like, well, you have to remember that they went up against Monday Night Football. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it went up. This was the best Monday Night Football game of a pretty disappointing season so far. The the Pooper Bowl. If you haven't heard about it, Google it.
Okay.
I can tell you haven't because you were very shocked. I feel like that I said that.
No. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
Okay. We're gonna bring it down for a second. Basically,
is it like the Puppy Bowl or is that
no?
Okay.
someone the reigning MVP had to leave the field, maybe or maybe not, because he pooped his pants and
what?
Then came back to the field later to like lead a stunning game-winning drive to win the game against the Cleveland Browns, which makes it even better.
With different pants.
You'll have to Google it. There's a lot of
like. Was it obvious he was wearing different pants? Or
no, that wasn't obvious. But they cut. They were like he had hamstring injury problems all year, and he just like runs off the field. And then they have this footage of him like shuffling through the tunnel, and it's we all know what that.
It's clearly
kind
the
of
I
shuffle.
My pants shuffle.
Yeah. So it had to go up against that. Which I'm sure Vince McMahon was like, why didn't I think of that?
I know, someone's going to shit their pants on Raw next week.
yeah. It's done, it's confirmed. So, like, Raw did have to go against that, but they go against Monday Night Football every week. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, AEW goes against direct counter-programming, too.
Yeah.
So, like, that's kind of a wash as an argument to me.
Yeah. Look, I want to be unbiased, like, as much as possible, but... You know, call me an indie mark if you want, but Raw has just not been good.
No, lately. Raw's been bad.
Raw
SmackDown's
has
been
genuinely
pretty good.
Been the worst WWE product of late. Like, yeah. SmackDown has been very good, very entertaining. The Roman KO storyline is excellent.
Yes. The Big E, all the, like, talking smack stuff now,
yeah,
too, is back to being
very well
amazing.
Done. But, like, Raw has just been bad.
Yeah, it has. But speaking of Raw and SmackDown, TLC is this Sunday. Mm-hmm. Another WWE pay-per-view is here. Looking at the card, what match is most interesting to you?
I mean, I'll just go because it's the best storyline they have going right now is the Roman KO match.
Yeah.
I love what they're doing with Roman. Leave it to freaking Paul Heyman to be the one that finally makes a heel Roman make sense. But I think they're doing great work. Kevin Owens is always just the best. And again, just comparatively, like it's leaps and bounds above anything else that the main roster is putting on.
Yeah. I think you got two people who are really great promos in Heyman and Owens, and mm-hmm. Roman, who definitely has been good at playing this part of the tribal chief.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, head of the table being introduced before they have to have a tables, ladders, and chairs match mm-hmm. could seem so ham-fisted, but it doesn't. It really it blends into this
yeah.
family infighting really well. And I imagine the finish of the match is going to have to deal with a visual metaphor of someone being at the head of the table, either victorious or not.
Yeah.
You also have, like, I'm excited for this too because Kevin Owens was the best indie wrestler in ladder matches for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And Roman Reigns always does really well in gimmick matches.
He does, yeah.
As a performer. So I think this could be really, really fun, even though one-on-one TLC matches are kind of hard to put together.
Yeah, yeah. What are you excited for?
I'm excited for The Fiend versus Randy Orton.
Ooh, okay.
And I wouldn't be that excited if it wasn't for the fact that it's going to be a Firefly Inferno match.
Mm-hmm.
The Inferno match, I don't know if we'll ever do an episode on this because there's been, what, like four or five Inferno matches ever?
Not many, but I mean, if we did a deep dive into just those, maybe. Because the gimmick of the match is bonkers when you mm-hmm. hear it.
It's really cool to play in a video game.
Yes.
It's always really disappointing in real life, the way that like the eye for an eye match was, where like the winner of the match is the person who can light his opponent on fire.
Yeah.
And sometimes there are flames at the side of the ring. Sometimes there aren't. Almost always there's some kind of like very quick, careful spot with the fire, or some sort of like pre-tape that they cut away to, right? Because like in WWE's world, you have to be like fully on fire to lose this match. And I think if they went back to doing the way that like ECW did fire, where they just like light a table on fire and put someone through it, like if that was enough to win the match, I think that these would work better. But they tend to be really goofy, right?
Definitely. They look great in a video game.
They do look great in a video game. But then you teach kids to light each other on fire, and that's not
always that is not PG era.
No. So we're going to go through a lot of different eras in what we're about to talk about. How's that for a segue? It's time to talk about our word of the day, which is the Intercontinental Championship. We didn't write a definition.
Heavyweight championship. I like to, so in writing the weird intro, I was telling you before, that is just an amalgamation of a bunch of Macho Man promos, and Macho Man, besides being an excellent promo, he does like little things that I always love, and that was something about him that always stuck with me, and I always appreciated it. When Macho Man had the Intercontinental title, he always called it the Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship. And I wish someone would do that like again. Like I want Sami Zayn to announce himself as the Intercontinental Heavyweight Champion.
There's going to be a lot of things in this episode where I feel like we say we wish that people did how they used to do.
Yeah.
We're going to be kind of old man saying, get off my lawn, reminiscent of a bygone era in this.
Yes.
Do you want to give us a definition of the Intercontinental Championship? I know we didn't actually write one this time, but I think you can piece it together.
Yeah, I could piece it together. So the Intercontinental Championship is, it's very self-explanatory. You are the champion of the intercontinental space,
which... Is that super self-explanatory?
Sort of.
We got into this a bit last episode of people don't know, like people think that means just like all the continents, but really it just means between North America and South America.
Yes, that's the initial play is North America and South America, the Intercontinental Championship. And in terms of a definition besides that, there's not much. It has like unspoken facts about it. So like the Intercontinental Championship is and always has been the secondary championship in terms of ranking, in terms of prestige compared to the World Championship and things like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You have something better?
I think you're right. It's the preeminent secondary title in wrestling. Even with like the US Championship at times being more highlighted, the IC title, it's historically the most prestigious secondary title. I'll refresh for people who haven't listened to last week's episode that this championship was established with the inaugural champion, Pat Patterson, in 1979, defeating Johnny Rods in the end of a tournament in Brazil. This was entirely kayfabe. There was no such tournament in Brazil.
That's so crazy.
It was just a way to try to get rid of the floundering WWF North American heavyweight title and like create a new secondary title that already had prestige behind it. Kind of like how they did with Fabulous Moolah's women's title.
Sure.
I would love to see like a 30 for 30 style kayfabe documentary that they produce about this tournament that never happened. I think that would be a lot of fun.
Sure.
But since then, the title has had a lot of stints of being important and a staple of WrestleMania to being kind of in the background. It's been traded back and forth between Raw and SmackDown as brands a million times. Mm-hmm. And that leads us to kind of where we are now. When you think of the Intercontinental Championship, who are the people you identify with the title?
For me personally, and again, I'm a product of my generation of wrestling fans. For me, Intercontinental Champion, you think Chris Jericho, Macho Man Randy Savage, Roddy Piper, Randy Orton, even.
Rob Van Dam is someone who I feel like him and Jericho passed it back and forth a lot.
One of my favorites as the Intercontinental Champion, just when he was running with it. But I would agree that he's probably not the most like prolific one. But Shelton Benjamin,
when
he was running with the Intercontinental title in the early aughts. That's when he was the Intercontinental Champion. I'm pretty sure when he had that Raw match with Shawn Michaels.
You are correct.
Where Shawn Michaels hit the greatest super kick ever. But yeah, so those are ones for me. What about you?
I think it's the same. I'd throw Bret Hart in there too. I actually like the prominent moments of the Intercontinental title are mostly in the New Generation era, which is not an era that we talk about that much on the show, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was financially a dark spot on WWE's history. And this is, I guess I should say it's for people who don't know, you would say it's like 92 to 97?
To 97-ish. It was, unfortunately, it was a downtime of wrestling between the two most popular times wrestling has ever been. It was Hulkamania, New Generation, Attitude Era. So, like, it had a hard spot to fill.
So it's, how do you deal with losing Hulk Hogan, right? That's kind of the impetus of the New Generation era, and you had to make new stars. And I think that for me, the Intercontinental title is used best as a storytelling device when it is there to introduce a new star, someone who's not ready to be the world champion yet. But unfortunately at that time, no one was ready to be the world champion. But the Intercontinental championship, has its heyday at that time. Talking about the usage of it, beyond being a star creator, how do you prefer to see the Intercontinental title used?
This has been a staple of the Intercontinental title for years and years now, but people have taken to calling it the workhorse title. Basically, essentially what that means is the Intercontinental title is not the world championship. It's not the most prestigious title, but whoever holds it is an extremely capable wrestler, like in the ring, and definitely just a storyteller in general. So Intercontinental title matches kind of have this prestige to live up to. They need to deliver an excellent match within the ropes, great storytelling, great physical like wrestling and everything. So that's my favorite part about it, is that and not always, of course, there have been stints where the Intercontinental title has been a joke title or something like that, but more than not, it has been known to be given to someone who is an excellent wrestler and is going to put their best foot forward between the ropes.
It's like, usually it's the match, or for a time it was the match on the card that was going to have the fastest paced action and the best actual athletes in it. Or, you know, there's kind of three phases now. So you have the IC title as the workhorse title, you have the IC title as the star maker, or you have the IC title as the filler, right? It can be a brick. It can be a thing where when it's just put on someone to give them something to do, or it's like, it can fade away. It can become something that people don't care about. And that's kind of how I would argue it's been recently. In fact, I want to point this out as saying, okay, I was looking at all the reigns in the history of this title, not including any by Roman Reigns. So Randy Orton had a 200-day reign as the IC champion in 2003 and 2004. Shinsuke Nakamura had a 201-day reign as champion last year. Do you remember any matches that Nakamura had for the IC title last year?
No, but I mean, I could guess, like, there was probably a match with Sami Zayn in there. There was probably a match against The Miz or Dolph, maybe. But
yeah,
I don't remember any of them. It was.
So Shinsuke Nakamura, who is a workhorse wrestler, people were saying, like, where is he? What is he doing? Even though he was holding the second biggest title for two-thirds of a year. Randy Orton's reign, he was an up-and-comer, and he had this coincided with his Legend Killer gimmick, where he was beating Hall of Famers or future Hall of Famers, because I believe he wins the title from Rob Van Dam, mm-hmm. And like crossing them off a list. And this is what turns Randy Orton as like the young guy thrown into evolution into a star. And yeah. when he loses the IC title, he wins his first championship, his first world heavyweight championship a month later. Mm-hmm. So clearly the title proved that he was ready to be the champion in the eyes of Vince McMahon. Whether or not he actually was ready at that point is kind of up to debate, but mm-hmm. but it can be used so strongly there, and then recently can just be... I think Nakamura's reign is the best example of it being a brick when I say that.
Yeah.
Let's get really minute for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the actual belt design.
Ooh. Okay.
Is this the best looking WWE belt ever?
That's such a blanket statement. I can't say that. It is a beautiful belt in certain iterations of it. So I will say personally right now, the current iteration that Sami Zayn holds, not a fan.
It looks a lot like the 24/7 title, new one.
It doesn't appeal to me. It looks very much like this is a title that's like where the design is clearly meant to be like this is a new modern title and all that. I just don't like it. I obviously love the classic look from the white belt.
Yeah,
that look is excellent. But honestly, one of my favorite looks of the Intercontinental Championship is actually the one from Orton's reign back in the early aughts. Yeah. That sort of circular, like globe in the middle kind of thing. Like, I love that design. That was always one of my favorites.
Yeah, I think, and they kind of keep that design from the new generation through Orton's era too. Mm-hmm. Like, it really has a long shelf life. Also because I think it looked like the WWE signature, TV signature at the time that mm-hmm. had a similar like globe thing going on. But yeah, it was a really clean, it's always been a really clean title, whereas the World Heavyweight title tends to be big and grand and boastful,
mm-hmm.
And also like top heavy from top to bottom. The IC title tends to always be longer, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it tends to be stretched out, and I think that is the perfect design for a secondary title.
Yeah.
And you know, they went back to the white strap, the classic look, mm-hmm. not too long ago when WWE tried to revive the importance of the IC title. Mm-hmm. This was only a few years ago, where Daniel Bryan came out of WrestleMania as the perfect workhorse champion and said, I'm here to make this title important again. Then he, of course, gets injured, leading to his retirement, and they change plans, and they say, okay, the person who's going to bring the prestige back is the workhorse, Ryback.
Oh.
This was at Elimination Chamber, where he got the title. In hindsight, good move or bad move?
In hindsight, bad move. Maybe it was a good move at the time. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Hold on. You're going to hear me typing, but let's take a look at who he beat in that match to see if there's someone else who would have made sense. Because I remember that Daniel Bryan is there to present the title, too, and it was an event that I remember watching live. So you had Ryback defeat Dolph Ziggler, King Barrett, Mark Henry, R-Truth, and Sheamus. Actually, that's not the best best-looking crew.
It's not the best-looking crew. Like, of that group, obviously, I would have preferred, you know, like, someone like Truth win it or something. But I understand why Ryback would have won out of that group.
That's more in the, like, let's see if someone's ready to be the World Heavyweight Champion. Rather than the workhorse. But I will say, earlier on that card in a tag match was Cesaro, and there was the answer. That is the person who should have been there to make the IC title important again. I guess he still could. Do you think there's still time? Could.
Well, I mean, if you can tell the story, like, maybe because like at this point, Sami Zayn is like perpetually feuding with Shinsuke and Cesaro just forever. So, like, you could run a story like maybe Shinsuke gets the Intercontinental title back from him. That leads to Cesaro and Shinsuke breaking up, finally get the belt to Cesaro. Has Cesaro ever been Intercontinental Champion?
He has not. Thank you for asking. I was shocked at this when I was looking at the research for this episode. Because
has he ever
both...
been United States Champion?
Yes, he has. Okay. But he seems like the perfect person. He seems like the perfect person to be either the workhorse or the next star in waiting, right? Yeah, maybe not the next star in waiting anymore, as he gets long in the tooth in WWE, but he still consistently gives some of the best TV matches and works with everyone.
Yeah.
So it seems like that would be a strong person to have either holding on to the IC title for a long time or hot potatoing it back and forth with some people. Plus, you've got his history with Sami Zayn, who's doing a great job as a heel champion right now with that title. They have had the matches that put NXT on the map. I don't know if Sami can work that way anymore.
I hope he can, but like he certainly hasn't been allowed to.
Yeah. But I think that is a match I hope to see here soon, and like a long feud that can maybe bring the IC title back to some prominence.
Yeah.
So the prominence that we speak of, it was a big staple of WrestleMania for the first 12 WrestleManias. Mm-hmm. But then from WrestleMania 19 through WrestleMania 27, it was only defended once on the biggest show of the year. What happened to change the prestige of this title?
Who was the predominant IC champion through those years? I'm sure Jericho is in there like once or twice, probably. I'm thinking probably The Miz a whole lot.
The Miz does have the second most title reigns ever as the IC champion, so I guess that makes sense. This is kind of from like 2002 to... I'm kind of just taking a quick look. A lot of Chris Jericho, a lot of Rob Van Dam, a lot of Johnny Nitro, a lot of Umaga.
That crew.
Yeah. A lot of Drew McIntyre and Kofi Kingston and Dolph Ziggler.
True. Wow, yeah.
So there is like that point from like, there is a point in 2009 through 2012 where the people who have it are people who would make sense as like budding new stars, where it's John Morrison, Drew McIntyre, Kofi Kingston, Dolph Ziggler, Wade Barrett, Ezekiel Jackson, and Cody Rhodes. And I think Cody Rhodes is the only one of them who I remember as having like a long and meaningful IC title run. But for whatever reason, it fell out of favor, and it did it quickly, it seems. So it's not in a great spot right now. The right person maybe has it. Sami has been doing great heel work, and the issue about the legitimacy of who is the IC champion has been a pretty consistently good storyline since WrestleMania. Tyler, how would you fix the Intercontinental title going forward?
So I do love what you said about it is on the right person, but it's just not being utilized the right way. I think Sami as Intercontinental Champion is great, but we need to see a little bit of a return to that workhorse aspect of like you need to let them wrestle. Like let me see Sami Zayn versus Cesaro in a 25-minute match of just like excellent wrestling. You don't need to put these matches, like, they don't need to be the main event. They don't need to have all of the TV time leading up to it. Like, just give me an excellent in-ring story for like 20 to 25 minutes. And that's how you do it.
Yeah. I think actually, it should be prominently defended on TV like every other week. Basically, right? Because
if we're following that model, the same idea of when John Cena was doing the U.S. Open Challenge,
yes,
that made the United States belt matter again,
and like
it also helped that it was during the time where I think Brock probably had the world title and like he was absent for months at a time, but still, like the idea is still the same.
Yeah, I think they should bring that back and steal it with the IC title. It's hard with Sammy as like a heel champion because he wouldn't go out of his way to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he could be forced to.
Well, then that's how you turn him face.
Yeah, like, that's true. But like, I mean, the U.S. Open champion, or oh, not championship, but the U.S. Open Challenge made the U.S. title relevant for a number of years when John Cena was doing it, and then Seth Rollins for a time too. And, you know, AEW has not been subtle in stealing that for Cody with the TNT title, mm-hmm. which has been a great way to bring new faces to TV, to have a competitive match with a big star every week. And I don't think anyone would fault WWE for going back to the well on an idea like that.
No,
not at all. Also, like, looking at the number of people on the WWE roster who have not been world champions ever, but are people who the audience would buy as world championship material, who else on there would you like to see in the IC title, like, fight?
Xavier Woods.
Ooh.
I think would be excellent. I don't know if Big E has been Intercontinental Champion.
He was when he was Langston.
That's Big E Langston. I mean, Big E would be great, but I'm hoping for a little more for Big E. But I think Xavier Woods would be great. Again, with the New Day, like, now that they are working with the idea of, like, operating them as individuals rather than just a team, you have a potential for, like, a Shield effect here of, like, all three of these guys have the potential to be world champions. And if you just build them right, I think you could absolutely do that. So I think for me, Xavier Woods is the top of that list.
Mm-hmm.
Give him an excellent intercontinental title run to establish him as a competitor, as a contender. And maybe that could lead to some like incredible WrestleMania match where like Big E has the world title and he's got to face Xavier and then Kofi's the guest referee. I don't know.
I would love that. I think someone like Finn Balor made sense a few years ago, WrestleMania, when he won the title. Mm-hmm. But again, because we've already seen him as world champion, it's hard to go
it
back
feels
down.
Like a step down. Yeah.
So three people who I think could really make, like, it could make them a star is Ricochet.
Yeah.
And I think that could also lead to eventually getting, you know, a Ricochet versus Rey Mysterio match on WWE TV, which needs to happen.
Absolutely.
I think it would work for someone like Matt Riddle, who's been introduced at a time where he hasn't been able to be like the prominent part of SmackDown.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking really about which show people are on for this right now.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And I think if you want to use it as a star maker rather than the workhorse, I think a year-long reign as IC champion would be smart for Keith Lee.
I knew you were going to say Keith Lee. I was thinking in my mind.
This is the guy who it seems WWE is really interested in, you know, hot-shotting into being the next star who can work with Brock Lesnar and Drew McIntyre and huge guys. I think you should run back the Legend Killer thing. He's already beaten Randy Orton once.
Yeah.
And you can have him beat big established guys. It would make Keith Lee equal in their eyes to the WWE audience. Mm-hmm. I think it would lead to a great WrestleMania match with Randy Orton about the Legend Killer idea.
Moniker,
if he wasn't busy with Edge or being lit on fire, you know, this weekend.
Sure.
So that is who I think makes the most sense. But you have to commit to that idea and not push Keith Lee into the world title too quickly, which is kind of what they did with him at the end of his NXT run, is it not? Because he was NXT North American champion, and then
I think
got rid
of it. NXT is weird. Like, it's an anomaly to itself in that idea because NXT has that difference of, like, here's a guy who is clearly we've, like, built up from nothing in NXT, and then there's the guys who come from elsewhere who are already very established. Mm-hmm. So, like, Keith Lee winning the North American title and then the NXT title within, like, a year of being on the brand – totally okay with me. but the main roster still has that different feel. So honestly, I'd love Keith Lee, and I want, like, I want them to push him to the moon, but it does still feel too early for him to be the Universal Champion or the WWE Champion. I do agree with that.
Yeah. Do you want to take us through some of the notable kind of like stats, points, and moments of the title?
Sure. Yeah. So the Intercontinental title, again, it has been around since 1979, and some historical points that are great for it. The first time it was ever vacated, which actually I think that'd be an interesting thing to look up on all titles, like when was the first time the NWA world title was vacated or something like that.
Well, that might be in like 1912 due to like promoter disputes. Yeah. Like,
but yeah, so the first time the Intercontinental title was ever vacated was actually after WrestleMania 6, when the champion at the time, the Ultimate Warrior, actually defeated Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6 for the World Heavyweight Championship, vacating the IC belt after, which very much it cemented it for the future as the secondary title.
Sure did.
Another point, the only woman to ever hold the Intercontinental title is Chyna, who won the belt from Jeff Jarrett at No Mercy 99, this being in the Good Housekeeping match.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. Have we ever talked about that is also the match that he held up Vince McMahon for a bunch of money before?
I don't think we talked about that, about the backstage dealings with it, just about the match in itself.
Yeah. Maybe we talk about that when we do our soon to do episode about the history of Impact.
Yeah.
Because I think it could lead into
history of Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
Yeah. The most title reigns ever for the Intercontinental title is held by one Chris Jericho at a total of 9 separate reigns.
I feel like the Miz will eclipse that soon. They probably don't want Chris Jericho.
They don't want
Chris Jericho to have that.
Oh yeah, yeah. That's distinction. A very good point.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate for Jericho, but hey, that's what happens. The longest uninterrupted reign of the Intercontinental Championship was held by the Honky Tonk Man from June 2nd, 1987 to August 29th, 1988, a 454 day reign.
Yeah.
I do remember that. That is something that has not been broken, and I don't know. I don't foresee them breaking it anytime soon.
Probably not.
Because, that's something I've known for literally since I've been watching wrestling is just like, oh, yeah, Honky Tonk Man, the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion.
That's more like the only thing I know about the Honky Tonk Man
that's the only thing I know.
Rather than, thinking about the Honky Tonk Man when I think about the IC title.
Yeah. Shortest reign, however, is held by one Dean Douglas. For
the
total
Dean.
13 minutes and 52 seconds.
Oh boy.
I should have looked up the specifics of what pay-per-view that happened at or something. But yeah.
I'll take a guess that he probably won it from and then immediately lost it to a member of the Clique, because I think that this was a punishment of how much they did not get along backstage.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And then the Miracle in Milan. I remember this moment.
I loved this.
I remember watching it live, and I was so confused. This was the day that Santino Marella debuting in Italy to win the title from Umaga, April 16th, 2007. Now,
this was on a Raw episode?
This was on a Raw. Yeah. As someone watching this was the craziest thing you had ever seen, because Santino Marella was debuting. He had not wrestled. He was not an established wrestler.
He was literally a guy in the crowd.
Exactly.
Right?
So the kayfabe storyline is Umaga comes out with the guy. I can't remember his name. What was his?
Armando.
Armando Estrada.
Estrada.
That's right. Yes. He comes out with Armando, and I don't know. I can't remember if this was something that they had been running for a couple weeks, where Armando would challenge someone from the crowd, some indie plant, to come out and get squashed by Umaga. But so this specific time, they pick out Santino, and I don't think I was fully aware when I was 16 years old that it clearly he wasn't some random guy from the crowd, but I was
or from Italy.
I'd never seen him before. It's clearly a plant or something like that, but at no point do you think the plant from the crowd could beat Umaga. Umaga, this guy who's been running through the entire roster. Main eventers, too. Like, yeah. not just your job guys. Like, mm-hmm. And Santino wins the Intercontinental title. I just remember him, like, celebrating with the belt because he was pulled from the crowd, so he's wearing jeans.
Yeah. Like, I loved Santino as IC champion.
Yeah.
I think I guess you can also put like a outstanding comedy mid-carder there, but they really haven't done that too much.
No.
All right.
An incredible debut though. Like, could you imagine how stoked Santino was that they were like, "Hey, you're going to win the Intercontinental title
also,
on
can
your
you
debut."
Also, can you do an Italian accent? What is your favorite IC championship match of all time? We have a few that we've picked, and we'll run through these pretty quickly.
So we do have a few to go through. If I have to pick my absolute favorite, again, it's just going to be because I know the most about it. And again, I talk this freaking pay-per-view up all the time. This might be Tyler's favorite pay-per-view ever, but Chris Jericho versus Chris Benoit, the ladder match from Royal Rumble 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I I'm just most familiar with it because that was like one of the first wrestling tapes I had, and I've watched it so many times. So I've seen this match so many times, and it's just excellent. It's the epitome of the Intercontinental title in that it's the secondary title, but both of these guys treat it as the top prize. Like, they do, they mm-hmm. want that belt, and they would do anything to get that belt. And also, this is just one of the best ladder matches like I've ever seen. They utilize the ladder in the best ways. The highlight of the match, of course, is when Jericho gets Benoit in the Walls of Jericho across the top of the ladder. Like, it's just incredible.
It's funny that the pure workhorse championship that is for the best workers ends up having a lot of the most notable ladder matches of all time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's a lot of these are ladder matches, mm-hmm. which seems kind of strange.
What is your favorite? And then we can do honorable mentions later.
Man. I rewatched a lot of these today because I was going to come in saying one of them, which is also a gimmick match. Mm. But now...
Ooh.
I think I've gone back to Macho Man versus Ricky Steamboat at WrestleMania 3.
A classic.
And I think that I've gone back to it because of some of the historical importance that I maybe didn't know about it. Like, I think we just knew that this is one of those from the early WrestleManias they yep. point to as like, this was the match, and that's yep. all you knew. It's like, it was so great. But there's a lot of things that it does that have a huge impact on the way that we watch wrestling today. Mm-hmm. And it is like two perfectionists who get together to construct a match, right? And this yep. is a time where almost everything was called in the ring, and instead Steamboat and Savage sat down for months and scripted 102 beats in a row
yep.
for this match down on a legal pad. And it's interesting that it's on the same card as Andre versus Hulk Hogan, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that these two matches are probably what WWE internally still uses as their examples of the WWE style of a match, right? Because, like, I've heard that Steamboat vs. Savage is the best, like, worked match ever, and it's yes. not. It really isn't. But in the, if you think of it as context of like, this is what workers in the WWE style look like, then it's perfect. Mm-hmm. This is one of the first matches, Tyler. It was going to blow your mind.
This All right.
is something I found in my research. To have multiple false finishes.
Oh, multiple.
There are 23 near falls in this match.
I knew that. I was aware of the amount of near falls.
Yeah, but I did not know that was like that. Basically, they only had like one false finish at most before this.
Wow.
And this is kind of why it broke the crowd's brain.
Yeah,
it's because that it was really creating new language in that mm-hmm. way. They also never had a rematch.
Yeah.
It's I'm just waxing like philosophy. I can't speak thinking about now like the historical context. I don't know if I've ever seen the spot used ever again of the heel being so frustrated at not getting into your fault that he takes a swing at the official and the official ducks it so that he doesn't have to end this great match in a DQ. That's something I want to see stolen recently.
Yeah.
And they work at like such a quick pace that it's amazing that this match is only 2 minutes longer than Andre versus Hulk on the same card.
Oh my God. That's shocking.
I would love, and I think the listeners, you should put both matches up in one like window and watch them side by side and see the difference in the like way that they're moving. I think that would be a fascinating experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I can't say it holds up much more than I thought it was going to. It's sure. Really, really great.
Yeah. What was your other choice that you changed from?
The one I changed from is a match that is the people who know us know that it is the go-to match for Andrew and Tyler drunk at a bar trying to tell people to watch wrestling.
Okay.
That we were most willing to pull up on our phones, and it is Randy Orton versus Cactus Jack.
Yep.
in a hardcore match at Backlash 2004. This makes Randy Orton.
It does.
It serves the purpose of like a older established guy turning a younger person into someone who matters.
Yep.
And I mean, if we haven't talked about it already, what's the exact moment that you realized that Randy Orton was a star in that match?
Oh, it's those thumbtacks.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
and that I think is because like wrestling, it's one of those weird things where like, you know that like a lot of this involves like very real pain that the performers put themselves through. And it's a spot like that. It's a moment like that, that really clarifies for you as the viewer to be like, okay, this person is willing to put themselves through very real excruciating pain for my entertainment. And something about that is it's endearing. And like for me, seeing that spot was the first time I was like, wow, like I give a shit about Randy Orton. Mm-hmm. Like I know he's a heel, but like I like Randy Orton because Randy Orton cares about enough about being a good performer that he would do something like
yeah.
that. Oh.
Because it's different. We'd seen thumbtacks before, but this is the first time I think that either of us had seen someone take that spot without long pants or a shirt
which I'm not sure how much protection that offers, but it's some.
I'm sure if you had the choice you would wear them.
Yes.
We got four other ones kind of here on the list. Is there another one that strikes a lot of memories in your mind? Most of these are from the new generation era.
Yes. Yeah. Most of them. Honestly, another one of my favorites personally, and it's a less talked about one. But one of my favorites is Bret Hart versus Roddy Piper at WrestleMania
yes.
8, for the Intercontinental title. And this is a unique match in that it is one of the very rare times where WWE has told a story between two faces feuding.
Mm-hmm.
This was a rare time in Roddy Piper's career where he was a face at the time. He was the Intercontinental Champion, and Bret Hart was the previous champion. I think I don't remember the exact story leading up to, but Bret Hart used to be the champion. Piper got the belt from somehow, and now Bret Hart wants his title back.
Yeah. And it's important to say because I had never seen this match until today.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah,
so
but good. The previous reign was Bret Hart's first reign with this title, and he didn't have it for that long. But continue.
Yes.
Yeah.
But so Piper has the belt. Bret Hart wants his belt back. And this is such an interesting story because they're both faces at the time. So the promos leading up to this are excellent because it's Bret Hart talking about, like, Bret Hart's a face. Bret Hart talking about how much he respects Roddy Piper. He looks up to him and stuff. And Roddy Piper, who was also a face at the time, champion, being like, look, kid, you're great. Like, you're going to be one of the best one day. But this is my belt, and if you want to try to take this from me, like, I'm not going to hold back. And the actual in-ring action, the in-ring story they tell is great because it's a unique one you don't get to tell very often of these two faces wanting to just have a great match, but both of them slipping into heel tendencies. They do these little heel things and where you're like, oh, is Bret Hart gonna turn heel in this match and do that, or is Roddy Piper? And the back and forth and the storytelling of that is excellent.
Yeah.
The culmination of this match, which is great, honestly, it's so funny because like I hate that finish now when I see it, and not because it's overused, it's just because like in my mind I'm like, I hate that so much, the sleeper hold roll up backwards thing.
Yeah That's the thing that's referenced a lot, like I think people directly reference it, which I didn't realize until today.
But and so Bret Hart wins the belt because Roddy Piper has him in his signature sleeper hold. He runs up the turnbuckle, falls backwards, and the ref counts that as a pin against Piper. So my favorite like just storyline, like it's just an example of Roddy Piper is such an incredible performer, is that like following that match and stuff, Roddy Piper up until like his death would kayfabe be like, I never lost that match. I never lost it. You know why? Because the ref, the rules, the ref should have checked on Bret Hart first before he pit, like counted the pin, and Hart was asleep.
I think it's important to say too that like right before that sleeper hold happens, that Piper has the opportunity to turn heel.
Yes,
and yeah, hit him with the ring bell and decides not to. I cannot believe that the first few minutes of this match are not ripped off more modernly, and that it's like a super stiff fight where Bret Hart controls the center of the ring with a wrist lock that cannot be like undone, and Piper delivers some of the stiffest chops and shots. And it's just like, can he get out of this wrist lock? And it leads to them both tumbling outside of the ring together. And the crowd is dead at the beginning of this match. But after this sequence, and once they get back in the ring, they get a standing ovation. And it's like, man, it's just, it's so simple and so great. And it ends this like stiff wrist lock fight where it's like they can't get the better of each other. Ends with the amazing way that Bret teases turning heel, where he has a shoulder injury. He fakes a shoulder injury, and the ref goes to like stops the match for a bit, and then when the ref is like, okay, you can go back to it, he has played possum and almost gets a roll-up win. And that is, it's perfect. So perfect.
An excellent match. Just it's so unique in the way that they get to tell that story. Yeah.
And it's the first thing that makes Bret Hart taken seriously as a star. And he holds that title until another one of the matches on our list, which is Bret versus Bulldog in Wembley at SummerSlam 92. Had you seen this one before?
I actually haven't, no.
Yeah, it's really long. It's a bit too long, but it is... I'm going to make a hyperbole, but I don't think it's incorrect.
Okay.
That it is the... consistently the loudest audience in a match in wrestling history.
Wow. Okay.
They like it's
I gotta watch
in,
this.
Yeah, it's in Wembley in the UK. They put British Bulldog in the main event, and he has like Lennox Lewis like with him coming down to the ring, and it's just like it is deafening the whole time. It is crazy. You have to check it out just for that reason. There are a lot of other good things in that. Dina Hart, who was Bulldog's wife and Bret's sister or cousin or something, is ringside, and they keep cutting back to her, and it's great. The other two that we have on here were both ladder matches. HBK versus Razor Ramon at WrestleMania 10 in the first televised ladder match in WWE history. And then The Rock versus Triple H in a ladder match at MSG.
See, I forgot that was even a ladder match.
Yeah, it is, and it is bloody. that's SummerSlam 98. Is there one of those that you think you know better than the other?
I would say HBK versus Razor Ramon. But... the actual story is a little lost on me and everything. I just remember, you know, certain ladder spots and stuff. And if anything, I just remember how awkward they were on that ladder.
Yeah, the ladder buckles pretty quickly, and they only have one ladder, and it's like, oh, they never have just one ladder at any WWE ladder match ever.
And that was the other thing, like, there's just one ladder.
It holds up pretty well still. Mm-hmm. Things I will say to watch out for is that with Diesel at ringside, there are three of truly the ugliest mullets I've ever seen in my life in that match. And
excellent.
It's a kind of violence by weapon that WWE audiences clearly hadn't been exposed to, because the first time that they use the ladder, it's just a baseball slide. Razor's on the outside holding the ladder, and Shawn Michaels does a baseball slide and kicks him. Mm-hmm. And it gets kind of like the response from a crowd that you would get when they think someone's really hurt.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird to watch. And then you have The Rock and Triple H turned into stars. Like, this really is the match that makes them stars at this point, I feel like, because at this point, The Rock is still the leader of the Nation of Domination, and Triple H is still, like, recently become the leader of DX after Shawn Michaels' retirement. I think part of the reason maybe why this match doesn't get, you know, trotted out much is because it also, in the build-up, includes the unfortunate angle where DX is in blackface, pretending to be the Nation of Domination.
Yeah.
But a few notes about this match, if you go back and watch it on the network. Triple H comes to the ring with what's supposed to be like a big match entrance, where Chris Warren and the Warren Band do the DX theme song live. And they keep cutting back and forth between, like, pre-taped highlights of DX and them walking to the ring.
Yeah.
And you can hear through the feed, it's still, like, on the WWE Network, you can hear it, that the guitar player, like, loses his hearing.
Uh-huh.
Like, he's like, I can't hear the track. And so they play some of the track, and then the musicians play some of the track, and none of it syncs together.
Oh,
like the musicians and the drummer are not playing at the same time. And it's
that honest. I may have seen that, because I've seen a clip of that band or some band playing the DX thing live, and it is atrocious. It's so bad. So that could be it.
It's probably it. Also say that Triple H wrestles in long purple tights and looks exactly like Edge.
Okay.
And this match really is a direct reference to the Razor HBK first ladder match. They're both at MSG too.
Yeah.
So like they look similar because of that weird camera angle. But the first moment with the ladder really in the match, in the Rock Triple H one, is also a baseball slide, where they do an homage and then raise the stakes, where instead of it being the ladder on its side, Triple H kicks the inside of the ladder so that the top step is what hits The Rock in the face and busts him open pretty bad. So those two are really good to watch together, I would say.
Yeah.
And you'll notice that the most recent match we had in that list was from 2004.
I was just thinking, I was like, man, are there any like recent Intercontinental matches worth seeing? And to be fair, I'm sure there are some. Like, immediately what comes to mind is it was probably like 2 years ago now. Do you remember Dolph's farewell tour, where he was like announcing, like, I'm leaving, like I'm gonna be done.
Yeah.
He was feuding with The Miz over the Intercontinental title, and it was all leading to a
they main invented a pay-per-view with that, right?
Yeah, a ladder match for the Intercontinental title.
In Cleveland, where they're both from.
I don't remember the like specifics. Was it like if Dolph lost, he had to leave? Or
I think so. I think that was the idea.
It was something along the lines. Dolph ultimately did win the belt and obviously stayed with the company. But no, I remember enjoying that match. Like, that was one of the better matches for the Intercontinental title we've seen recently, and one of the best matches that The Miz has definitely ever had.
I've already talked about it many times on this show before, but another IC title match that is a ladder match was Dolph Ziggler versus Luke Harper. I'm trying to remember what I've talked about it so many times, and I can never remember what pay-per-view was on, because it was not supposed to be like this great match. And then it was TLC 2014. Check out that one, where Luke Harper early in separates his shoulder, and then it only gets better from there. So we've kind of gone through everything with the Intercontinental title that we had on the docket. So with the little bit of time we have left, do you want to dust off the Kayfabe 5020?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Give me one second.
It's been a little while. Oh my gosh. There's more dust coming off of that than a Sting AEW entrance. Snow, you know, it almost got there.
It helps. It's got that N64 cartridge quality. You know, just give it a good yeah,
blow it and put it back in.
It'll be good to go.
Does it have a rumble pack?
No, it's got the Game Boy adapter thing that like you play Pokemon Red on.
Oh, but, yeah. And then you can play it on your TV.
Yeah. I'm not sure what you want to put in there. I only have a copy of Dr. Mario.
That's okay. I like Dr. Mario. All right. Do you want to flip the switch?
Let's do it.
It does feel very like I'm seeing myself in 64 bits in here right now.
Ooh,
so I like that upgrade.
Yeah.
Do you want to give us the first question, Professor Ward?
Oh, absolutely, Andrew. It has been far too long. And talking about the Intercontinental title here, the Workhorse Championship, if you will.
The Warhorse Championship?
The Warhorse Championship. The Intercontinental title has never been defended on the continent of Antarctica. Now, being the Intercontinental title, I think that is something that needs to be rectified. So, Andrew, I would ask you, who would you like to see defend the title there and why?
Did Kurt Russell ever wrestle? Because, like,
I mean,
anybody from
I'm
the
not
thing
sure,
ever wrestle? Keith
but
David? No.
I would love to see him as Kurt Russell.
I think you're onto something there. I think you want to have people who are used to the elements and could actually do well with the extreme cold. So I'm trying to think of who's like wears a lot of clothing in their attire. Or you know what? WCW's Glacier, I feel like would be well attuned for this.
Glacier, he thrives in the cold.
Yeah. The Yeti.
The Yeti.
Would be good. Is it the guy who won Tough Enough so many years ago and then got released
on
WWE TV or on the NXT show.
Absolutely. Yes.
The Yeti would be good. The Minotaur, I think he has a lot of fur. I guess George the Animal Steel had a lot of fur too, so he was pretty warm.
A furry man. He was a furry animal, excuse me.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe MVP with his full bodysuit, it kind of looks like the way that someone who like skis would look.
That's
so
true.
I bet you that
that's
he
true.
Would do good there.
That's got to be some sort of thermal gear there that keeps the body warm.
Oh, here's the answer. Too cold Scorpio, because he's too cold already. Yeah.
That's it. You got it.
Put them all in a frozen ladder match. What is going to hurt worse, Tyler? Randy Orton in 2014 getting thumbtacks in his back without a shirt, or whatever is going to happen to him on Sunday during the Firefly Inferno match?
Look, this is really the question here, and it's a matter of what do you think hurts worse? Is it the physical pain that your body can go through, or is it the mental pain that you can be put through? And I think, you know, we've seen that match from 2004. We've seen that. Oh, the tacks protruding from Orton's back. And that certainly is painful. Certainly a pain that I don't want to experience. But I don't know. You know, the Fiend just has a way of getting in people's heads and you know, really making them change their perspective, the way they look at the world, the way they look at themselves. So I don't know. I think the mental anguish that Orton could go through in this Firefly Inferno match, it could, I don't know if he can come back from it.
Yeah, I also was trying to think if he is someone who lives in like a hot climate, if he could deal with being on fire. I don't know that he could. I guess they're both lingering pains.
Yeah. Is he afraid of bugs? Are there going to be actual fireflies? We don't know.
That's a great point.
Now, Andrew, look. 20 years from now,
Yeah.
At WrestleMania 57, who is going to win? The incredible marquee fight, main event anywhere, between Becky and Seth's child and Brandy and Cody's child.
Mm-hmm. So this is Rue versus TBD named yes. baby.
Yes.
Man, it's going to be tough because if it's at WrestleMania, I feel like people who make their name elsewhere don't tend to win. There's a kind of a home field advantage for people who are like WWE lifers. So mm-hmm. I would say that Rue probably has the advantage.
Sure.
But I'm going to say, okay, Rue wins the match, wins the title, and then lurking in the shadows is the child of Renee Paquette and John Moxley, and he's going to come in with a briefcase to cash in. Ooh. And is going to steal the championship to win WrestleMania 57.
Oh, man. I love this. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Final question.
All right.
If Roman is at the head of the table,
mm-hmm.
who else is at the table, and where are they sitting?
Well, you see, I think, and to be fair, that we've never established what kind of table we're sitting at. If this is a round table, it's all for naught. So I think that this is we are looking at your standard conference table,
mm-hmm.
Longer rectangle.
What kind of AV capabilities does this conference table
I
have?
I think this is a conference table, maybe not the newest one. Like, we're not talking, you know, 2020, you know, Bluetooth and all that stuff. But this is a conference table from, like, you know, early to mid-2000s. Maybe like a dark maple or an elm or something
like
that.
It has like an HDMI input that like no one can figure out how to use.
Maybe I'm not even sure about HDMI. It's got the the outlets in the middle that pop up that you can plug things into.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It may have some old AV cables, the yellow, white, and red.
Mm-hmm.
But I think who else is going to be seated at this table? So we know that Jey Uso is going to be seated at the table. We know that Paul Heyman is going to be seated at the table. I think we are going to see a lot of the Samoan family seated at the table. I personally would really like to see Haku seated at the
Ooh.
Table. I would like to see the Tongans seated at the table. Now, I know they're different families, but hey, mm-hmm. that could be a really interesting table to be sat at.
Would Meng be there?
Meng might be there. He just might.
Or Rikishi, or who is the Samoan in Major League Wrestling?
Ooh,
who's the head of the Samoan hit squad, right?
That is definitely a question.
I may be crossing some streams here. There's a lot of Samoans to take care of.
But I think, to be fair, Roman is at the head of the table. Personally, I would love to see sat at the other head of the table, because there are two.
Mm-hmm.
Would be Samoa Joe.
Oh, I love that. Both of the Samoan Josephs.
Yes,
there.
The Samoa Joes.
Well, I think because of the fact that we just called Roman a Samoan Joe means that we're probably already falling out of the kayfabe 520
right
now.
It's the power is waning.
Yeah, should you flip the switch before it explodes?
Absolutely. Here we go.
Cigarette out.
It's still real to me, damn it!
We will ban you from the Summerfest.
You'll be banned from SummerSlam, is what you're saying.
SummerSlam.
Am I slammed out?
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing?
Oh my God!
Wow. That was a great trip. I can't believe that we got through a whole thing about the tables and did not suggest that the Dudley Boys were sitting there, too. That's truly astounding.
Truly astounding, yes, yes.
That's all the time we got for this episode. Tyler, do you got anything you want to update us on?
No, not really. Just let's talk some life stuff. Been watching Impact lately.
Yeah.
So that's a change. It's better than like the last time I saw it, which was like in the really bad times of Impact. So I'll give it that. But I don't know. I feel like they need to be doing a little more. I feel like with the spot they've been given of having like Kenny on there and getting so many more eyes on the product, like I think they really need to go for it. Like, give me something amazing to see. Give me a really cool Impact storyline that has nothing to do with the AEW invasion.
Yeah.
But something that wants me, I'll tune in to see that and then also stick around to see Kenny's 10-minute promo at the end of every episode. Yeah.
I guess this is a like a news item at the end of our episode now, because we didn't talk about the Kenny crossover. I am excited for him reuniting with the Good Brothers. I like that they seem like they're going towards the idea of Kenny being the world champion there as well.
Yep.
It also led me to the crazy thing where Kenny was working three shows within like a day and a half, right?
Yeah.
Last week. Mm-hmm. It also led me to the greatest discovery that I did not know, that AAA currently has a division that is made up entirely of luchador versions of Marvel characters.
Oh, okay.
And apparently, like, AAA is not known for respecting IP law to begin with, but apparently sure. Marvel was made aware of this and was like, that's really cool, and is now doing a line of action figures and like gave them the permission to use these characters.
That's very cool of you, Marvel. I did not expect that.
Yeah, so I believe the trios match from that pay-per-view ended with Spider-Man being caught out of the air by Thor and pinned. Or not by Thor, by Thanos and pinned. But Venom was in there too, and
That's
Captain
excellent.
America was in there.
That,
check
that
it
reminds
out.
Reminds me very much. I've told you this story, just a quick little sidebar. When there was a con that I went to a couple years ago in Richmond called Galaxy Con. It's just like a big nerd gathering. And at this con, they had a wrestling promotion there. And we like went and saw, like, they set up a ring and they had like a show. And it was, God, I can't remember the name of it, but their premise was the same idea, is they would hire indie wrestlers to come and dress up as, you know, comic book characters, just video game characters, things like that, in wrestle matches. And it was super cool. I saw Leva Bates was there wrestling. Mm-hmm. She was dressed as some Borderlands character. Kelly Klein was wrestling. She was dressed as what's that girl's name? Hela, Thor's sister from Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it was awesome. We got to see, like, you know, Spider-Man faced Kratos.
That is really cool. I don't know if I've told you about my idea after going to a Ren Faire for the first time last year, that I feel like there should be an indie promotion that is Ren Faire wrestling, where, okay. like, the characters are knights or like, mages or wizards, and, like, could have very gimmicky
yeah,
kind
sure.
of stuff with that. And I feel like that would be a fun thing, too, to have prominent actual wrestlers be like, who do you want to be this week? In that sort of way.
This is the deepest of cuts. But, like, what if we... same premise, but Shakespeare characters.
I think that's great, too, honestly, to do, like, a full-on, like, Victorian era... Yeah.
That
yeah.
was the deepest of cuts. But
yeah. I mean, you could basically do what Celebrity Deathmatch did for a while and just do like Time Machine Wrestling League and have like the entranceway have a bunch of fog and like be like a time machine, and you have prominent wrestlers wrestle as different historical figures against each other. I think that is the kind of like goofy comedy thing that even Jim Cornette might enjoy, or like wrestlers who are super serious if they're like, do you want to be Attila the Hun this week? They'd be like, yes, I do.
yeah.
So I think this could work. Maybe you have Bill and Ted as the promoters and the entrance is the phone booth.
I love it.
Right?
Sign me
Book
up.
Us. It's great. if you want us to answer your questions in the KFA 5020, submit them to us on our website, muchadowrestling.com, or on Twitter at adowrestling, or you can email them to us directly, muchadowrestling@gmail.com. As always, we're going to leave you with the words of the immortal William Shakespeare. If wrestling be the food of love, fight on.
Yeah, baby! That baby was supposed to be Chris Jericho and not Adam Cole.
Yeah. It was a pretty good Chris Jericho.